From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the 8th edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. A dozen or so people, diverse in age, ethnicity, and political leanings, are engaged in a year-long experiment in civil discourse. Each month, we bring you a conversation with members of the group. We're observing how the tone and quality of the conversation changes over the course of the year, and how relationships can evolve among people with very different views. This month, we invited a guest facilitator from the national nonprofit Better Angels, a group dedicated to reducing polarization in America. The goal of Better Angels, like ours here at Beneath the Surface, is not to eliminate disagreement or change people's views. Instead, we're seeking to foster understanding and alliances among people with diverse opinions. With us today, Jim, Connette, Bruce, Catherine, Cedric, Morgan, Lee, Carl, Daryl, and Joe. Marcia Gelman is our Better Angels facilitator. She's explaining the fishbowl exercise we're about to undertake.
So what we're going to do today, and I'm sure that some of you lean red and some of you lean blue.
That's true, but not so fast. Our group also has several shades of purple. It's a bit more complex and nuanced, but more on that in a minute.
So what we're going to do today is called a fishbowl exercise. We will flip a coin and see who's in the middle first. Either the reds or the blues.
The idea is simple. Once we're divided into reds and blues, one group sits in the fishbowl, that's a small circle in the middle, while the other group sits in a larger circle outside to observe. The group in the middle talks among themselves about the policies and positions of their political party that they think are good for the country. Then they talk about the reservations they hold about their own party's positions. But that's the easy part, according to Better Angels' Marcia Gelman. The real work is on those listening, who are not allowed to comment verbally or with hairy eyeballs.
You have the biggest responsibility because you can't talk. You can't roll your eyes. You can't look at your neighbor. You can't sigh. No nonverbals.
Marcia gets ready to flip a coin to determine whether the reds or the blues are up first in the fishbowl.
What if you need them?
What?
Carl repeats the question quietly.
Do you lean one way, Carl?
Just lean.
I think you do.
I don't lean one way either.
I don't.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you?
I was thinking the same thing.
I'm kind of in the middle, too. I mean, it depends.
So we've got a lot of open-minded moderates here, but I still think they lean.
No, they were all leaning one way or the other when you started this exercise.
There's laughter in the room, but there's also tension among the two people who say they don't want to be identified as either red or blue, even for this exercise. Those two people also happen to be the only two people of color in the room, Carl and Cedric. Marcia flips the coin after asking Daryl, a red, to call it.
Tails.
Okay, it was heads. So the blues.
I didn't see it.
Everything is complicated with a group that's now very comfortable with one another. But Marcia has bigger fish to fry and plows ahead.
I didn't see it. The blues. Okay. Go to the middle of the fishbowl.
We have 10 people today, but only three are sitting in the middle now, happily identifying as blues, Morgan, Jim, and Lee. Marcia is troubled by the lopsidedness. She asks for volunteers, two more people to join the blue group. Carl reluctantly decides he'll sit with the blues. Bruce, who up until now has identified as a conservative, also steps up.
Well, I'll volunteer too.
Make it even, please.
Joe, who describes himself as right of Attila the Hun, also offers, but he gets laughter from the peanut gallery.
No, you could not.
Marcia asks the blues to explore how their policies help the country. Morgan is up first.
I see our policies as redistributing wealth to people who need it, from the people who have gained it or inherited it in an uneven playing field. And I see our party finding ways to elevate the roles and equality of women and people who are marginalized. And I find our policies also work towards ending the violence in our country through restrictive gun measures.
Jim says it's about a woman's right to choose and control their own bodies.
I also think that the concept that a corporation is a person that has a right to free speech and to spend money unrestrained in our election process is completely wrong. Corporations are made up of people, but they are not people.
And says Jim, healthcare. If healthcare is for profit, he argues, the focus is on making money by charging more and offering fewer services.
One of the great benefits of the liberal movement today is to raise awareness.
This is Bruce.
So the liberal movement today raises awareness of women's rights, the inequality for women in the labor market, the distortions of income. Equality is not equality of outcomes. Equality is the equality of opportunity, so that everybody has the opportunity to drive to an outcome that is good for everybody and good for themselves.
Remember, Bruce identifies as a conservative. Lee, a true blue, says he grew up in a conservative household and values the civil rights movement, which he says has benefited women, African Americans, and people in the LGBTQ community.
20 years ago, I would not have believed that marriage between people of the same gender would be acceptable, let alone legal and part of the law of this land. And I think that's important.
Carl, our reluctant blue, gamely offers something.
This is difficult for me, so I'm just going to say that the whole equality conversation and looking for people's rights and all of that is of importance to me. I'll say that.
Let me talk a little bit about something else related to this.
No one seems to notice Carl's deep conflict, and I can't ask about it yet because we're still in the exercise. Now the Blues have to explore the reservations they hold about their own policies. Jim talks about the validity of states' rights.
The way I see this country is with a strong central government, but there is a strong movement, and there always has been, to have each state control itself. And I understand there's a difference between how Maine conducts itself and how Texas conducts itself.
He veers quickly back to the things he says should be legislated at the federal level: gun control, women's rights, health care. Carl speaks up again.
The majority of what's being said at this table has been said before. It's a lot of conversation with no action. I'd like to see people follow through on anything that's been said at this table. Anything.
It's a small window into why he didn't want to put his support behind red or blue.
I think there's a reservation about redistribution of wealth.
Bruce is worried about how we define fairness.
You know, what is fair to somebody else is not fair to me.
Lee's reservations are less policy focused and land more in the logistical arena. It's good, he says, to have a healthcare system that provides freedom from the concern of a financially catastrophic health event. But how do you do it?
I worry about government designing systems, people in government designing systems. A camel is a horse designed by committee.
Now it's time for the Reds to enter the fishbowl. The Blues observe.
Okay, is this everybody?
This is everybody.
Cedric? Cedric's not going to join us?
He's a wuss.
He's an independent.
Again, the group of four is lighthearted about Cedric's refusal to align with a party, but Cedric is serious. We move on to the first question for the Reds. Which Republican policies do you think are helping the country? Catherine says Republican policies in general have been good for the economy. Just look at the stock market.
You know, it's up and down, but it's always up and down. But I think it's much stronger than it's ever been if you look back over the history of the stock market.
I think one of the greatest advantages to the conservative viewpoint is decentralization. We want to bring it down to the individual level, the individual making the decisions, and then progressively up. We do not like centralization of decision-making, particularly in some place that is not familiar with our individual situations.
I think the effort on the part of the doing away with many, many of the government regulations that have been put limits on productivity and what one can accomplish.
That's Joe.
Also, if you think in terms of the policy that Republicans or conservatives espouse, is that they do not want the judiciary to legislate from the bench, but rather interpret the law, not make new law.
Conet wants to see healthcare that's not done by committee. Now it's time for their reservations. Catherine kicks it off again.
Probably the biggest reservation I have right now is this whole Second Amendment issue. I believe that we have a Second Amendment and we have to be honest and true to it, but I don't believe in the assault rifle, if you will, and I think we have to do something about that.
My reservations are greed, and that is the conservative viewpoint tends to be identified with capitalism, and the biggest shortcoming is that a lot of people are greedy and use the capitalistic system to satisfy their own greed.
I think the reservation I have is that although I subscribe to the policies that we're trying to accomplish, and I think this is a problem with both sides, I do know that there are members of the of my side that will not compromise.
To quote Maya Angelou, I think we're more alike than we are different.
There's still too much in D.C. being handled by committees who have no idea what they're talking about.
And on that note, the first part of the exercise concludes. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. When we come back from the break, it's a discussion led by our Better Angels facilitator about what our participants learned, or at least that was the agenda for part two of the fishbowl exercise. And just a production note, we just had lunch, and that may be evident to you from some of the sounds. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface.
Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It's the eighth edition of our year-long experiment in civil discourse. Today, we're welcoming a facilitator from Better Angels, a national nonprofit dedicated to depolarizing America. Just like Beneath the Surface, Better Angels seeks not to eliminate disagreement or change people's views. It seeks rather to foster understanding and alliances among people with diverse opinions. If you're just joining us today, our group includes Jim, Conet, Bruce, Catherine, Cedric, Morgan, Lee, Carl, Daryl, and Joe. We've just completed the Better Angels fishbowl exercise in which we divided the group into reds and blues, or conservatives and liberals. One group sits in a circle on the outside. The other group sits in a smaller circle on the inside. The group on the inside discusses policy positions with their political allies, what they think about issues, where they agree with their party, and where they have reservations about their party's position. The group on the outside is asked only to observe, listen, and learn. Then the two groups switch positions. Marcia Gelman is our guest facilitator from Better Angels. She led that exercise. Now she will take us through a post-exercise exploration. Marcia Gelman, welcome.
Thank you, and thank everybody for participating. What the next question is, and I'm gonna ask different people and go around the room, what did you learn from the other side? And what did you find in common with the other side? Matt, can you start?
Basically, in common, I believe everybody wants the best for this country. We just have different opinions of how to get there or what that is.
Okay. Morgan?
I found that we were all in agreement that experts should be making our policies and that the policies should take into consideration local government instead of regulation at the federal level. And I think there's some amount of a spectrum on that. You know, I'm pro-regulation for environmental reasons and big things that affect the whole country. But I do think we all came to the agreement that experts should be making our policies and informing politicians.
And so you learned that as the fishbowl was progressing.
It sounded like both sets of the blue and the red in the center were both saying strong opinions about individuals and local government.
Mm-hmm. Joe, can you tell us what you learned and if you found common ground?
I think, as was just said, you know, that people on both sides really care. In terms of what's happening in the country on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, they have strong opinions and they feel strongly about their issues, as I do about my side. But yet, in a setting, you can sit and discuss things and hopefully come to a conclusion. And the conclusion is that whether or not I agree with you, I do respect your ability and your rationale to feel the way you feel.
Bruce?
Well, I learned that people are giving careful thought, earnest thought, and great effort and some emotion to trying to understand what is best for the country within their framework, within their beliefs, within their experience. So I think both groups are earnest and sincere in seeking what is best. And that leads to what I think we have in common, and that is the rights, the opportunity, the success of the individual is what we're all seeking. But we don't always agree on the road to get there, whether it's central planning, whether it's more free market. But we do have this common interest in seeking the best for the country and the individuals.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me is obviously that we're more alike than we are different. And I think Bruce just made a good point about the individuals and focus on the individuals. I think probably the thing that I noted was idealism versus pragmatism, and I think I heard maybe it was Bruce expressing ideas, or maybe Lee, about being pragmatic and not idealistic. And then I think Carl made a good point about let's stop talking and start acting. And he says that that one of the things that I agreed with very much was his criticism of the blues in being more talk and less show.
Carl, would you like to respond to that?
First, I want to clarify what you just said.
Okay.
My blues, I mean everybody. My blues, red, green, purple, everybody. You're more talk than action. Mm-hmm. And the common ground that I learned is that everybody has something to say. That's it for me.
Okay. Thank you. Cedric, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No.
Careful, no.
As far as like what I learned from the observation?
Maybe how this went, what you learned.
That people are very strongly opinionated. And yeah, I can't talk about what I learned from the observation.
Okay. Yeah. I appreciate that. Lee?
I agree that this was a demonstration of the earnestness of the people in the group, but I knew that from like the first or second time we met. So I can't honestly say I learned that today in this exercise. And that there are people who carefully put forward their ideas.
I will say that while we're alike, and I, for instance, I think that Daryl's take on individual freedom is he cares as much about it as I do. And it's a driving idea for him as it is for me. The way to get there, as Joe pointed out, our ways of getting there might be polar opposite. So that's, you know, there's a lot there where if we're willing to talk, we might be able to find a way to incorporate both ideas. But you got to be willing to talk first. And that's what I think this whole year is about.
Great. Catherine?
I have to agree with Lee. I think sitting here, having known the group now for 8 months, I guess we're into it, I have believed from the beginning that it's a very articulate group who are willing and able to share their experiences and opinions on things. And so I didn't learn that, you know, but it did reinforce today that I believe that. But a conversation that I had not long ago was, are we truly representative of kind of the man on the street? I think that this group is probably maybe more knowledgeable, and I don't know whether it's because of this or we're here because, you know, which came first, but we are pretty knowledgeable on issues, on, you know, things that are happening. Is the average person, the average working person, going to work and raising their kids and things like that, as astute to the issues as perhaps this group is? And so I think that reinforced today that we are a pretty articulate and knowledgeable group to begin with, able to, you know, express opinion type of things. So I think that was an important thing. And the one thing I did like was from Bruce, we talked about the equality of opportunity. And I think I've heard that before, but it kind of re-impressed in my mind. We are really all about just trying to have equal opportunities, however we come to it.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, anything to add to what Catherine said?
No. Okay. She expressed it well.
Okay.
But I'm curious to know this issue of equal opportunity, is it important as long as it doesn't affect me or doesn't affect you or the person whose ideology it is? That's what I see. I see that everybody talks about equality as long as it doesn't affect them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take something away from them, cause them to lose. I think it's good. It's good equality. But if it affects them, or their lives, and changes something in their daily walk or their daily movement, then it's negative, it's bad. That, to me, is very evident in the discussions we have in this room. That people, this equality that we are talking about, I'm not exactly sure. I don't feel that this equality is an equality that is American. I think it's about me. It's about what I think is right and what I think is good. That's why everybody keeps clashing heads with each other, because they're thinking about what they think is right. If those people over there say something, then something's wrong. If you say something, it's good. And then we can talk about equality. But I'll leave it there.
I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't participate. I'm not gonna say that the activity made me realize this, but I don't think that it's just a coincidence that the two black individuals were the ones that didn't want to participate with leaning towards the side politically. And so as you talk about how equally this is what people see as equality for themselves but not for America, I don't think America is equality. As I look at politics, I look at it as a white man's game, as a white man's another system of oppression. Like, who gave you the, who died and gave you the title that you can make decisions for everybody's walks of life? And so, and then now you want to make us affiliate ourselves with a party. And as I look at that, it's like, hey, red or blue, red or blue. Growing up for me, those colors meant blood or crip, you know? So I didn't, if I didn't force myself into a gang, into a neighborhood where I could physically be hurt, why would I want to affiliate myself with the political party that has, on either side, never really made any big drastic decisions that have benefited me personally as a black individual? You know, it would have been very cliche, and people probably would have stereotyped me to lean towards Democrat, but that was where the KKK was started up under. You know, Lincoln was a Republican, but now Trump is a Republican. So why would I want to affiliate myself with either party in any way, shape, or form? Especially when there hasn't been any decisions that have been made really on either side of the party that have benefited us. Even when you look at slavery being abolished, as we talk about policies, as soon as slavery was abolished, what happened after that? The NRA was created. Then we couldn't have rights to guns, right? And then we were able to get votes or what have you. And that's a lot of pressure on black people with politics, with voting. Oh, people die so you can vote. Oh, people die so you can vote. They died so they can join the white man's game. You can't beat them, join them type of thing, right? They didn't set up their own table to make up their own policy decisions on how we should be living. We were trying to have the other folks make room for us at the table when we could have built our own and made our own decisions, just like we built the country. And so I liked the rule of the people that had to observe, because we had to just sit and be quiet, as I think that was best for me to do during this activity. As people do articulate themselves very intelligently when something like this hits a passionate emotional nerve. As a black male, we could, as we speak passionate on certain things, it could be looked at as aggressive and anger. And so for me, that's what made me make the decision to take a moment away from this activity and just observe. And I heard it within a lot of people's statements of equality is okay until it may affect my bottom line. I heard it from Bruce when he talked about how he gave a beautiful statement about equality for opportunity, but then he comes and contradicts himself by saying some people shouldn't distribute wealth. Well, that's the main thing. That is the biggest gap between opportunity of equality is the opportunity to be able to access, to build and gain wealth as African Americans. And so,
yeah. And just try to get this in a way that everybody understands. It reaffirmed, maybe not learned, reaffirmed how you feel.
That's a good question. That's a good, yeah.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Jim.
Wow. Yeah, that puts everything we just discussed into like a different perspective. And I had said once before earlier on that every time we meet, we're going to talk about race. In some way, shape, or form, it's going to come down to race. It is the central issue in this country. And it is, I mean, and I recognize this after hearing you, like it's the white privilege that we have as white people, predominantly in this room, to decide that we're liberal or conservative, and our Democrat Party or Republican Party are not exactly doing what we would like them to do. I think that's one thing I agreed on. You know, we all have these ideas, whether they're conservative ideas or liberal ideas, but when we see our ideas being legislated in the government, we don't see the compromise that we see is needed, and then we don't see the results either. And so we're all left pretty frustrated. At least I think I am, and I think other people are too.
Did you find any common ground with the conversation or with Cedric and Carl? Do you see the common ground in what you both believe?
I agree with what both of these guys just said. Like, a lot of people assume that black people are in the Democratic Party. And I think about that movie, Bullworth, Senator Jay Bullworth. Mm-hmm. And he said, he made a comment at a fundraising rally, and it was mostly black people. And he said, you know, the Democratic Party has done nothing for black people. And somebody asked the question, like, well, you mean that the Democratic Party isn't for black people? And he said, isn't it obvious? Mm-hmm. Haven't you been paying attention for the last 50 years, they get elected, they take your votes, they don't do anything.
So that's what you picked up even after the fishbowl.
I picked it up just now. I mean, I knew that intellectually, but it just got reaffirmed that that's really a central issue that we just didn't talk about before.
Okay, we just have a few minutes. Does anybody want to add anything while we're here about what you learned in Common Ground?
I want to ask, in relation to what we're discussing, how did you feel about Barack Obama being a black president? Do you feel that he served the black community?
If I can interrupt just for a second, I think you're going to unpack that later.
Okay.
If you have anything about what you learned or if you saw or found any common ground, that's... Anybody? Okay. Thank you very much. I learned a lot from you as well. So I appreciate everyone participating. And I appreciate the remarks afterwards as much. Thank you. And look up betterangels.org because we do a lot of these kind of workshops and they're great.
Thank you very much, Marcia Gelman, our guest facilitator today from Better Angels. You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. When we come back from this short break, we'll continue the conversation. And of course, this is pre-recorded, but if you'd like to weigh in with your own observation, we might discuss your point in a future episode. You can reach us at coastline@whqr.org. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface. Listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It's our year-long experiment in civil discourse with a group of 10 people today. We welcomed a facilitator earlier from Better Angels, a national nonprofit that's also seeking to improve conversations and build alliances among conservatives and liberals, or reds and blues. If you're just joining us, we completed an exercise called the Fishbowl, in which one group sits in a circle and discusses their view of policy, as well as their reservations about their own party's positions. It's the job of the other group to listen, observe, and look for areas of common ground. We've heard the observations of both sides, and now it's time to go a little deeper. Some of the issues that arose in that post-exercise discussion that we just had, we're going to unpack a little more now. And Cedric, you abstained from the exercise, and just a few minutes ago, you explained that part of the reason for your abstention is because American politics, in your view, is a white man's game. And you explain why. And so my question to you is, how do we, as a group, open it up so it's an every person's game?
That's a good question. I don't know if the everyday boots on the ground individuals are the ones that can make that happen. I think it's the old white man that sat at a table and said, we're going to build the structure of America, to finally realize that they made a mistake when they made that decision, because it's not the beautiful America for everybody that is pitched in. Was it the Declaration of Independence or whatever the case may be? I mean,
So let's take it back a little bit. You also said in your explanation that you are aware as a black man that you can appear aggressive and angry when you're really opinionated about something. Can you just talk about how you felt when I was pushing you to join a certain side?
How I felt when you guys wanted me to go to the table to make a decision where I is a different kind of Republican. I knew if I would
have make you angry, right?
I don't say it made me. No, it didn't make me angry. No, that's that's a lot more than that to make me angry. But it made I want to. No, it didn't make me angry at all. That's not the emotion that came from that. What came from that was, if I get up for the Democrats, that's gonna look very cliche, you know. And if I get up for the Republicans, that's gonna look like a real shocker. And the truth, in my honest opinion, is that I'm not a fan of either party. Like I said, and from what I had explained about from the policies and decisions made before, I haven't seen parties make that strong. I haven't seen policies being made that made a big shift for the advancements of, you know, people of color. And so for me, with listening to people talk about policies and so forth and so on, like she said before, it just affirmed for me why I didn't get up, because I would probably just be at any table, red or blue, I would probably be combative with whatever thoughts are at that table.
I want to throw out a question to the whole group. When you heard the other side talking about their reservations about their party's position on something, was there anything you heard that made you think, oh, that's eye-opening, or I haven't heard that before? Or was any of this a window into the complexity or the nuance or the vulnerability of the other side that you hadn't really seen before? Jim?
Yeah, when Catherine had mentioned that, and like many people, the Second Amendment is a important document, and a conservative Republican principle is to have a strong support of the Second Amendment. To hear her say that when it comes to assault rifles, then maybe we need to have some discussion. And I thought, okay, well, that's probably the opinion of quite a few Republicans that are probably not sure that they should be just gung-ho, no restrictions at all type of gun enthusiasts. And so that I appreciated that.
But Jim, on this particular issue, you know, there's been a lot of people standing up and talking about it, including the President of the United States, who everybody thinks is sometimes, not really truthful with what he says or being honest with it. But he's a guy who's been pushing it and says that we're going to come to some type of changes, or he's going to try to make that happen. And that's part of the challenge that we have. And, and even with what Cedric has said before, we attach labels, and one side attaches labels to the President of the United States is that he's a homophobe, he's racist, you know, and the president's side, if you will, talks about, you know, socialism and crazy and, you know, want to give up. And somewhere along the line, we have to understand that they're promoting themselves and their own agenda, and not necessarily the people that they say they're going to represent. You know, I think everybody knows where my political leanings are, but I'm getting tired of getting caught up in a situation that I'm a racist, I'm a homophobe, I'm deplorable. But the reality, in terms of my life and what I've done here and sitting around this table, that I've learned to respect everyone here, and I think they have learned to respect me. And if we get down to that issue and we understand how that happens, that's really what we're talking about. And that's what I find so frustrating. And I'm a leader.
Which part do you find frustrating, Joe? The labels?
Yeah, the labels, and automatically,
name calling.
You know,
which both sides do. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think this is part of the idea behind what we're doing. It's called Beneath the Surface, because you can't really put labels on people. People are more complicated and nuanced.
It is less.
And last night I was at a chamber meeting, and right away someone came up to me and tried to get me caught up in a conversation about the president. You know, and obviously, you know, and it's in a way that, hey, if I really fell into it, we were going to get into knock down, drag out. And, you know, and I was there to have a good time, have a drink, and meet with some of the people, and talk a little bit about business. And that's what I find sometimes
a challenge. The fact is, I guess maybe this isn't fact. My understanding is that the president is an outlier and isn't quite a Republican in the traditional Republican sense, or even a conservative in the traditional sense. And so when we accuse him, I believe accurately, of racism and homophobia because of policy he's enacted, I understand that that doesn't represent all of the people who voted him into office.
Yeah, but you just said something that you made. You just said that the president, you know, is a homophobe and whatever, and a racist.
The policies that he's enacted, not letting transgender people serve in the military, he is absolutely exhibiting that.
Well, then, but the aspect of it, what about the reality of what the military says and what goes on, and how that affects the outcome of the organization? You know, there's more to it than just, you know, just saying that he's a racist, you know, and
so Joe, what you're saying,
here's a good example.
You're saying that you can't even take the president and put him in a box. He's more complicated and nuanced, and yeah, and I do think we need to be careful about picking out specific people, because part of this is about citizens, not elected officials, coming together and learning to understand the complexities of one another before we get to the elected officials.
You asked
Go ahead, Cedric.
You asked the question. The question I think you asked was, what did we learn or hear from other people's reservations? Mm-hmm. To send some respect back Joe's way, I did not expect for him to say that a lot of folks on his side aren't willing to compromise. I think that was a huge reservation, and I think that is one of the biggest reservations that is hindering and delaying the moving forward of what equality could start to be and look like. So to answer that question, I respect that opinion, that reservation, and it definitely triggered something in my life, and still, you know, for you to realize that.
I'm on the same line. Do you think that people on the other side of front, you know, with a divergent view that I have, are willing to compromise, you know, and I think that's part of the challenge.
I think the people on the other side have always been compromising.
Thank you.
I will say.
Carl, yeah.
They've compromised to what goal? To what end? And that's Republicans and Democrats. Mm-hmm. To what end have they compromised? What do you want? If I stand up and talk about it, I won't say anything good about either one, because nothing has changed in the inner cities. Nothing has changed for poor people. Nothing has changed. Everybody makes all these policies and then they wrap little things around them. Like Morgan said, they wrap little ties around them so that if one thing occurs, then you shoot off and something else happens, and what was voted for never happens at all.
So, then, Carl, can you get specific? Because you said...
There's one thing I want to say very specific. And that's that every time a conversation comes up like this about equality, that President Obama's name comes up. President Obama was not a black president. In color, he was black.
That's right.
That's all.
Yeah.
Zero. And the United States Senate made sure that if he did have an idea, it was totally wiped out. That's number one. Number two, since our new president has come, everything that Obama did has been either wiped away, reversed. He's made every attempt to wipe President Obama's name from history, as far as I'm concerned, to say that everything he's done is just wrong. No president that we ever had has had this type of, what's the word I want? Review. done to them. None. So, it is, these kinds of conversations for me are very difficult.
You said earlier specifically that you had a hard time talking about equality because policy, you know, nothing ever actually happened. And you said people are willing to talk about equality and affirm the importance of that as long as they don't have to make any sacrifice of their own,
right,
as long as it doesn't affect them. Yes. Can you talk specifically? Well, like, give us an example.
Let's talk about neighborhoods.
Okay,
let's
go
talk
ahead.
About neighborhoods. I've lived in Wilmington. I was born here. Let's go to Red Cross Street. I mean, to Castle Street. Castle Street has been a poor, torn down neighborhood for years. Nobody invested any money into it until white people came and wanted to open businesses. They saw it as an opportunity to start businesses. And so they started investing money in Castle Street, rebuild it, put antique shops, now there's all kinds of restaurants, everything there. But why couldn't that have been done? Why couldn't black people have been given the same opportunity? If people want to go back to history and remember, I hate going to history because you bring up really nasty and mean things, but if you go back to 1898 and what happened in this city, then you have to talk about that. Because it's a reality. It's not a game. It's not something fake or something that didn't happen. It's a reality. It's one of the worst things that happened in the South, period.
Only happened in the whole nation.
It's the worst thing that ever happened. But now, all these places, 4th Street was a growing, booming business neighborhood for black people. It's gone, totally gone, and been taken over completely. So, those are where equality could have worked if people were passing, if the mayor, let's talk on local level, if the mayor had been processing policies to help black people reinvest into those communities, then yes, things would have been different and things could have been better. But that's not what happened. They kept those land, they kept those properties locked down, took them for taxes, and then all the other stuff that was going on, the drugs, that's another equality thing, drugs. Now, you see people get on TV and talk about how bad opioid is, how bad drugs are, but those drugs primarily affect white people. Opioids primarily affect white people. When crack destroyed the black neighborhood,
on purpose,
no one said anything, zero, nothing. Nobody on TV, no doctors coming to the rescue, no big national thing going on about how this is happening. But now with opioids, I saw a commercial the other day. It's unbelievable how much money that the government's willing to invest in rich people's kids.
Okay, Lee, I know you want to say something. We have 2 minutes left. This went so fast. There's so much more to explore here. But Lee, quickly.
Just to quickly jump on what Carl was saying, when crack was destroying a large part of our country, it was, there were people who were saying things, there were people who were doing things, and what they wanted to do was put the people who used that crack in prison for the rest of their lives, while people who were using white powder cocaine were given a pass, largely. Mm-hmm. And now the people who are using opioids are being given a pass, largely. And that is, again, what I've been talking about today and feel very strongly is the fact that we're built on a white supremacist foundation. And I'll leave it at that.
And Joe, you have a response to that. 30 seconds.
30 seconds, very quickly. But that's been the history of the whole drug problem. And, you know, if we go back to the turn of the century, you know, there was a lot of heroin, there's a lot of marijuana and everything else like that. But it was identified with the poor black community. Therefore, nobody did anything. It wasn't until the 60s or so that we started this whole drug thing because there were more, it was spreading out. So I tend to agree, and I think that surprises people.
That's this edition of Beneath the Surface. Joe, Catherine, Bruce, Lee, Cedric. Daryl, Carl, Morgan, Connette, and Jim, thanks very much. Special thanks to Better Angels facilitator Marcia Gelman. Our producer is Caitlin Freund. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Ken Campbell is technical director. Beneath the Surface is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline Beneath the Surface.